Georgia's DBHDD has an urgent health warning. One of every 10 counterfeit pills contain fentanyl, a powerful and very deadly drug. Pills from friends or dealers are unsafe, and one pill can cause an overdose. More info at opioidresponse.info.
I'm gonna stand right in a hallway, shine the wrong.
That's the great Mahalia Jackson singing one of her most well-known songs. I'm going to the life I sing about. As you can tell from using that opening, we're going to take a step away from politics. Today, at least the politics of the Georgia legislature or what's going on in the U.S. Capitol. And today, take on some of the social issues of our time through the lens of the great Broadway director, but the man who got his big start in theater here in Atlanta, Kenny Leon. Kenny won a Tony Award for his direction of Raisin in the Sun on Broadway, which starred Denzel Washington. The play also won the award, the Tony, for Best Revival. Sophie Okonedo, who was in that cast, won for Best Featured Actress in a play. But Kenny Leon has won an Obie Award, which is the off-Broadway equivalent of the Tony. He directed a phenomenal production of the play Fences, August Wilson's play with Denzel Washington, that was nominated for 10 Tony Awards, including his work as Best Director. He has done lots of television, including, you may recall, the NBC productions of The Wiz and Hairspray Live. And he's got some projects that we're going to talk about today, including a new movie about Mahalia Jackson, which airs on the Lifetime Network on the Easter weekend. In addition, Kenny has been given any number of important awards. One of the most significant, that's probably not as well known outside the theater community, but is very well known inside, is the Mr. Abbott Award for Lifetime Achievement in Directing. It's named after George Abbott, one of the legendary impresarios of Broadway theater. He won the award for excellence in directing from the Drama League. Kenny serves on the board of New York's Public Theater. And for those of you in Atlanta, Georgia, he's also the founder of True Colors Theater, which continues to be producing plays, at least we hope it will soon when the pandemic lifts, at True Colors, which has been a real addition to the Atlanta theater community, by giving African-American artists, African-American plays, actors, even more opportunities to be seen by the broad Atlanta theater community. Kenny Leon, I could say a lot more. You're also the author of Take You Wherever You Go, your memoir, which is a terrific book. And we're going to talk about a number of projects you're working on. I didn't mention the Netflix series Amend with Will Smith. That's an important contribution we will discuss, and we've got more we'll talk about. How are you, Kenny?
I'm good. First things first, it's great to be above ground, and it's also great to be in your presence, Mr. Hall of Famer, and I want to acknowledge that you've been inducted into the Hall of Fame. I really do think that you and your listeners do a great service, so congratulations on that, and I have to also admit that I am I love and respect you, but I love and respect your wife, you know, as well. It's one of the writers I've worked with in the past, and I just want to shout out to her as well. Janice Schaefer is just an amazing writer. But it's good to talk with you. It's good to be home. I've actually been, you know, since September 25th. I've been blessed to be working since September 25th up until, you know, this past Friday. So it's great to be with you, and I'm excited to be here and to just have our dialogue.
So we say, first of all, I haven't mentioned on the air. So what you're talking about, late last year, I was, or maybe the beginning of this year, was named to the Georgia Broadcasters Hall of Fame, which is a lovely thing to have been recognized for. It just says that I'm really old in this business now. But I also think we have to say, Kenny, as we talk, we have known each other for almost 28 years now. You were the artistic director of the Alliance Theater when I first met you, and I met you through my wife because Janice Schaefer worked with you at the Alliance. And so we've had a long time. Your friendship, I was lucky enough to inherit my friendship with you through Janice. And like many, many people in Atlanta, we've been so grateful to have had a chance to watch this incredible journey that you've taken as an artist, both as in theater, film, television. Every time I think I know what you're working on, I realize there are three or four projects I didn't mention. But let me start with this, if I may. You know, you've got this Lifetime movie about Mahalia Jackson that we're going to talk about in more depth in a minute. But one of the things that's fascinating about that is your love for Mahalia Jackson predates your involvement in that project. You have a morning ritual that includes listening to her music, right?
Well, that's sort of, I've been teaching a lot of young folks during the pandemic at San Diego State University. And I always tell them, you know, my best work is yet to happen. And I do feel that Mahalia Jackson is an accumulation of all the work that I've done in my professional life. And it is, all of my work is evident in the Mahalia Jackson story. And all those people in Atlanta who started watching my plays at the Alliance Theater and those who've come to Broadway to see my work, I think they can draw a line from the beginning to now. So hopefully the story will impact you and move you. But the whole ritual about Mahalia Jackson, on March 12th of last year, I had a play on Broadway, a soldier's play starring Blair Underwood and David Alan Greer, Rob Demery. Very successful production that has been nominated for 7 Tonys for this year. On March 13th, after Broadway was shuttered, I had to come home to Atlanta. Like that was a hard task. But for the last 25 years, I have called Atlanta home, but 80% of the time, I've been away doing the work. And so coming home on March 13th of last year was a different feeling. I was excited to come home and spend time with my wife, who, we're just not in the same cities all of the time. So that was different. And then with grandkids, that was different, spending time with that. And so all that was good. But on the first day back to Atlanta in my town home in Cobb County, I was like, what do I do now? You know, I'm not on an airplane headed to New York. I'm not in a Broadway rehearsal room. I'm not shooting a film at the back lot of NBC Studios. I'm in Atlanta. And I don't know what's my next work. That hasn't happened. So out of my own insecurity, my own fear of what to come next, I said, go back to your roots. Okay, let's form habits here. What are we going to do tomorrow morning when you wake up in Atlanta, in your house, not knowing where you're going to go next? Okay, I'm going to put on the music of Mahalia Jackson for 2 hours, because I grew up Black, Southern, and Christian. We went to church like 7 days a week. My mom was a gospel singer. So I found comfort in putting on the music that she loved. So here we are in 2020, and I'm putting on Mahalia Jackson for 2 hours. And then I would pray for like 2 hours. And I never prayed that long. As a trying to be the best Christian that you could be. And I know you understand that being a man of faith yourself, you know, but it's like, okay, does God want to hear me pray for 2 hours? No, but he has to because of my just where I am. So I pray for 2 hours, and then I recently learned how to meditate. And it's like, okay, just listen to your own heartbeat and, you know, just realize you are a small piece of this whole universe. So I would do that for like an hour. And then I just got a Peloton bike. And so then I would ride the Peloton bike for an hour. And then I would read. I'm really into James Baldwin, Zora Neale Hurston. So I said, I'm going to read writers who make me excited inside. And I'm going to read some of the plays that I haven't had time to read. So I'm working on mind, spirit, and body. You know, that's the best I can do. So when the pandemic is over, I'm going to be strong in all areas. So I did that, Bill, that routine, Mahalia Jackson, prayer, meditation, exercise, reading. I did that for 7 weeks, every day, 7 days a week. And it brought me comfort. It brought me comfort. I got into new books, like Ryan Holiday has a book called Ego is the Enemy. And so I got into understanding him. I got deeper into James Baldwin. And in the 7th week of that routine, and I'm feeling good. I'm saying, you know, except for like in my family, I lost 2 aunts and an uncle to COVID-19. And that was sad. And I don't hear my mother cry often, but that was the first time in a long time that I heard my mother cry because she couldn't be there with her brothers and sisters, with her sisters and brother when they needed her most. And she felt like their lives meant nothing because she couldn't be there even at the funerals to say goodbye. And she couldn't be there when they were on their deathbeds. And so except for that, and except for missing being in the rehearsal hall, I felt like everything about the reset was good for our country, for our city, for our world. It was just good for us to use this time to correct the direction we're going, to understand our connectedness to each other in a more powerful, meaningful way. But in that 7th week, I get a call from Lifetime. And they say, we want you. And you got to remember, the last thing I did for Lifetime Television was Steel Magnolias, which to this day still holds the record for most viewers on a non-original show.
And typical of you, Kenny Leon, you did the African-American production of Steel Magnolias.
Yeah, it was just the way I saw it, you know. And Queen Latifah, Felicia Rashad, it was a great cast. And I get a call from Lifetime, and it's like, because I promised I wouldn't do anything else there unless it was very important, because that was a big mountain, you know, to equal the success of Steel Magnolias. I'm like, oh, well. And they offer me, they said, Kenny, we want to offer you the Lifetime production of the life of Mahalia Jackson. I'm like, what? Do you know I've been listening to that music for the last 7 weeks every day? No, they had no idea. Do you know that, having an opportunity to tell that story encompasses everything about me? You know, black, religious.
Christian.
Christian, you know, all that. No, we didn't know that. And they said also, you can bring in, we have a script and it's already green lit, but you can bring in a writer to work with you to get it to your satisfaction. And all we know is we have to start shooting it in October because it has to air Easter Sunday weekend. And I took that job. That was the first job I had after the pandemic. And I thought like, oh, I was like, that is divinely inspired. I have to do that. And in fact, I called my mom and she's like, I don't care what else you're doing, but you have to do that.
People should know that your mother is an extraordinarily important force in your life and always has mm-hmm. been. And so it's always wonderful to hear you tell stories about her. So Kenny, the Mahalia Jackson story, she was born in New Orleans. Her family was poor. Her father was a preacher. And that's where I think when she was like 4 years old, she began singing and went on to this extraordinary career as a gospel singer. She resisted becoming a blues singer or a jazz singer, which I think Louis Armstrong at one point said he wished she would do. She wanted to sing her Christian faith, right?
Well yeah, but, you know, it's her mother died when she was really young, like 4 or 5 years old. Her father was not a real influence on her life. Her grandfather was. Her grandfather was really in the church, and her aunt raised her. And she was baptized when she was like 10 years old. And so the story we're telling is not about a person who is anointed with a great voice and who's perfect. We're telling this story about a woman who is knocked down 10 times, but she gets up 11. And that is a universal message. And so when I agreed to do this, I said, I have a specific way of seeing this story. And I want to tell it about an exceptional, extraordinary person. I want to tell it about a person who found a way to get up one more time. And because we're looking at it through the lens of 2020, we get to look at a woman who lived through the first pandemic. You know, she was born in the early 1900s, but she lived during the pandemic of 1918. She lived during the Great Depression, 1929. She lived during the First World War, the Second World War, the Civil Rights Movement. So certainly, if she could live through all that and get up one more time, then that is something that we all could learn from. So I'm hoping that all of us find ourselves in her story on Easter Sunday.
In 1963, speaking to your saying she was knocked down and kept getting back up, in 1963, mm-hmm. Mahalia Jackson sat down for an interview with Studs Terkel, one of the legendary interviewers of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And I want to play just a little bit of what Mahalia Jackson said in that interview, because it speaks to exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know. This thing, it's peculiar. When I'm on the stage and on television and working with white people, they just hug me and love me and say I'm so wonderful and I'm so great. And then when I'm walking down the street like an ordinary citizen, they don't recognize me. And when I go into the department store in the South, I can't get a sandwich, I can't get a bottle of pop, I got to stand, I can't even get a cab. And I'm just the Mahalia Jackson that they got through saying how wonderful I am. What I don't understand is what make people act like that? As Dr. Martin Luther King said, walk together, children, don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the promised land. And this promised land is right here in America. I was born here and ain't going here. Expect to die right here too. If they kill me for freedom, then I'll be buried on the land of free.
Kenny Leon, so Mahalia Jackson acknowledges that she is treated differently because of the color of her skin, but she still calls America the land of opportunity, the promised mm-hmm. land. That's important.
Well, absolutely, and that's another thing we're going through now with the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. You know, I'm reading a book now by Eddie Glaude called Begin Again. You know, we had an opportunity in the aftermath of slavery, Reconstruction, we had an opportunity after civil rights to get it right, to get closer to a more perfect union. And this last 4 or 5 years gives us another opportunity to get it right. You know, this after this pandemic and epidemic, we have an opportunity to get it right. And you know, and I'm like Mahalia, you know what I mean? I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying here to through storytelling to fight for a more precious, better America. And the thing that going back to the Mahalia story, you know, the what made it right. Just listening to your tape there, Bill, of Mahalia, for 5 seconds, I couldn't tell if that was Mahalia or Danielle Brooks. And Danielle Brooks was the first thing I said to Lifetime about the casting of the role. I was like, I just worked with Danielle Brooks as Beatrice in Shakespeare in the Park, Much Ado About Nothing. And she is the woman to do this because she has the acting chops and the singing chops. And she grew up Southern like I did. Her mother is a Southern bishop. She is truly the one to play the role. And eventually, Lifetime believed me, accepted that, supported that. And I think the world would be amazed at what she brings to this role. And we always, going in, I said, go ahead. I said, I wanted us to be 70% Mahalia Jackson and 30% Danielle Brooks. So it's artist's interpretation of Mahalia Jackson. And that way, I think the story will feel alive to viewers in 2021.
So just really quickly, Danielle Brooks, people would know her if for no other things for Orange is the New Black. She was one of the leads in that Netflix series. You cast her in your extraordinary production of Much Ado About Nothing, which won great acclaim, an African-American production of the play. And Danielle Brooks herself talked about how startled she was when you called her to offer her the part, because she said, here I am, an African-American woman. I'm plus sized. I have my natural hair. And Kenny Leon wanted me for the lead in this show. And, of course, she won great reviews, as did your entire production of that play. And by the way, if you're a PBS Passport person, you can watch that production. PBS filmed that production, and it's still on the PBS website if you're a member. And I was fortunate enough to get to see that show, and it was spectacular. So for when you bring her in to do Mahalia Jackson, it's just another part of your career in which you don't, people who you learn to love and respect, you bring them with you.
Yeah, but I also think that I was talking to my brother about this yesterday. He said, how do you know? I said, what do you mean, how do you know? He said, how do you know who's right for roles? I said, Tony, it's like different directors have different skills, different gifts. If I don't know anything, I think I know talent. You know, if I look at my career and I look at casting Lauren Ridloff and Children of a Lesser God, you know, a stay-at-home deaf mom who hadn't ever acted before. And now she's the first deaf superhero in a Marvel movies. You know, if I look at how we brought Shanice Williams to The Wiz Live through a big audition, and Maddie Baglio for Hairspray Live. And so I just have an eye for talent. I may have other flaws, but I have a good eye for talent, and I don't have to depend on someone's resume. The eye test is the eye test. And Danielle Brooks was my Mahalia from day one. I couldn't imagine doing this without her. And then when you start realizing that I wanted to originally shoot this in Georgia, because we get through tax dollars in Georgia, we're able to bring a lot of the film industry to Georgia. But because of the pandemic, we weren't able to shoot here. So we ended up shooting this story in Vancouver. And with that comes the challenge of how many American actors can you have in the production? So they said, well, Kenny, you can have Mahalia, but that's, I don't know, maybe one more. But God bless this project to allow us to have 5 other Americans. And they are from, a lot of them from Atlanta, Georgia. Jaquina Calatango, who was in Slave Play on Broadway, who lives in Atlanta, Georgia. Jaquina plays Mildred Falls, the piano player and best friend of Mahalia Jackson. Rob Demery plays the role of Dr. King. He is from Atlanta, Georgia. And Jason Durton, who did Ceremonies in Dark Omen for True Colors a while back, plays the romantic lead. So I'm very happy with this cast.
Okay, I've got to get to a break in a minute. But before I do, you just mentioned Dr. King and his participation, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's a character in this movie about Mahalia Jackson's life. By now, it's a pretty well-known story. But Mahalia Jackson, of course, sang during the March on Washington, and it was Mahalia Jackson, who people now know, kind of interrupted Dr. King as he was giving a speech that was not exactly lighting the crowd on fire. And I'm sure you replicate that. What does Mahalia lean forward and say to Dr. King?
Yeah, Dr. King was going on with his speech, and it wasn't the way he wanted it to flow. And she was about five or six people down on the left, and she said, "Tell him about the dream, Martin. Tell him about the dream." And if it were not for Mahalia Jackson, he probably would not have went into that improvisational refrain of "I have a dream." And so it is a woman responsible for the "I have a dream" speech in America's history.
I've got to take a break. But you know what, Sam, let's use Mahalia Jackson at the March on Washington, the song that she sang there. This is a newsreel clip, so the audio is a little scratchy. But she sang, "I've been buked and I've been scorned." The lyric is, "I've been buked and I've been scorned, children. I've been buked and I've been scorned. I've been talked about, sure as you're born. There is trouble all over this world, children. There's trouble all over this world. But I ain't going to lay down my religion. I ain't going to lay down my religion." As we go to break, here's Mahalia Jackson singing at the March on Washington.
Been buked and I've been scorned. Oh. Now I made it over. How did I make it over? Tell me how we got over, Lord.
Mahalia Jackson singing one of the songs that our guest today, Kenny Leon, suggested he'd love to hear. I think most of you who listen to the show know, we use WebEx to be able to see each other, and I'm watching Kenny sitting there singing the song along with Mahalia Jackson. Kenny Leon, before we move on, your movie about Mahalia Jackson will be on the Lifetime Network on Easter Sunday, right?
It actually is going to air on the Saturday, April 3rd at 8 p.m., and then it's going to repeat on Sunday at 8. But the first performance is on Saturday. And I just listen to that wonderful music. I'm reminded that Matthew Head, a musical composer who lives in Atlanta, works in Atlanta, only works in Atlanta, will not go anywhere else to work. He composed all of the music and the score for this film. So I'm so proud of another Georgian's contribution to this great masterpiece.
We'll look forward to that. By the way, just a quick story for me. You know, I grew up in Chicago, of course, and I had a number of good friends who lived in Chatham on the south side of Chicago, which they were very proud of the fact they lived down the street from Mahalia Jackson in what was an upper middle class neighborhood of African-Americans on the south side of Chicago. So I always think about them when I think about her life and career. Kenny, let's move on. I'd like to go back in your career a little bit. If I can, because I think it was so important to events that had already taken place, but that were going to again take place last summer when we saw the George Floyd shooting, Breonna Taylor. We saw Rayshard Brooks here in Atlanta, African-Americans killed by police officers. You directed the Broadway production of a play called American Son, with Kerry Washington. It's a play that takes place in real time. Kerry Washington, a mother who has come to a police precinct to find out what's happened to her son, who's just turned 18 years old, and the entire play takes place as she is trying to learn what's happened to him. She knows he's in trouble. She doesn't know how serious it is. If I can, before we talk about it, I'd like to play just a little bit of the trailer for that movie, because I think it establishes some of the themes that are so important in that movie, but then became so important in the dialogue people had last summer over around Black Lives Matter. Let's listen to some of the trailer from American Son, which then aired on Netflix.
My son never came home.
Look, I'm sure that he's gonna turn up. First name?
Jamal, J-A-M-A-L.
Does he have any distinguishing scars, tattoos, gold teeth? Does he go by any street names?
He doesn't have a street name.
There was an incident.
What does that mean?
Further information needs to go through Lieutenant Stokes. I don't know him personally. They told me that he's been paged to come down here immediately.
I want
to
know now.
Man, I'm glad you're here. She went from like zero to ghetto and nothing flat.
It's okay. Everything's gonna be fine. Where's our son?
Ma'am, I have kids too.
Any of them black?
Excuse me?
So, Kerry Washington talking to a young white police officer who is relatively oblivious to her pain, and he throws back at her, Kenny, all of these racial stereotypes, and only responds at, he says, we hear him say, she went to her husband, who's white, who walks in to help her. He says she went, he doesn't know that this is her husband, her white husband. She went from zero to ghetto and nothing flat. And I think that establishes a lot of the themes in the play, the film, and that became so pertinent even last summer. Yes?
Yeah, you know, it's I'm sitting here almost with chills thinking about the role of artists in our world and how we affect and impact change. You know, I was thinking about when we did Much Ado and I set Much Ado in the Future in Atlanta, Georgia, and I had a sign that said Stacey Abrams 2020. I wasn't trying to be political. I was just trying to let people know where the play took place. And we did that play in 2018. And then so people look at the PBS film and they think like, oh, wow, how did you know that she was going to be so influential? I didn't. But or when we talk about American Son, like, what comes first, the art or the reality? And I think we're always responding to what's happening in our world. And one thing I'm excited by when I visit young people in colleges and have them in Zoom classes, I'm encouraged by these young people. I know some people have doubts about where we are and where we're going, but I'm encouraged about black and brown and white and yellow young people, because they have a respect for difference that many in our generation didn't have. They have a respect for every kind of difference, you know, and some of it may be hard for some of us to deal with, but I'm encouraged by their respect for difference. So when I look at American Son, I hear three or four people in this police station all struggling with, you know, what it means to be true to themselves, what it means to be American, and I just think we got to keep listening. We got to keep listening to each other. I learned so much with that film of American Son, and what I learned was basically taught to me by Kerry Washington. I thought I was a liberal, fair-minded person, but Kerry taught me how to respect the female voice more, how to respect women even more than I was. And what she said, Kenny, she said, Kenny, this is a film about a woman at 4 a.m. in a room with three men with guns, even though one of them happens to be her husband and then another guy she doesn't know. But it just teaches me to, like, don't worry so much about what you think and what you say. Worry about what you hear around you. And just step back and try to leave space for others. So I'm trying to do that more and more with the work You know, even when I was doing Children of a Lesser God and got to spend time with the deaf and hard of hearing community, I grew from that production. And then when I worked on American Son, I grew because of the female presence in the room. And when I did Much Ado About Nothing with Danielle Brooks, I learned about images and how images control us. And you know, when Danielle was teaching me about plus-size women and started talking to me about dark-skinned women. And, you know, even when I look at Mahalia Jackson, I'm so proud of that because three of those women, Olivia Washington, Denzel Washington's daughter, Jacquina Calacanigo, and Danielle Brooks, star in the movie. They're the three top leads in that movie, and all of them are dark-skinned women. And even little trivia things like that, when have you seen a movie where three dark-skinned women carry the movie? So I think we can grow and we can learn from each other. So I'm radically optimistic about our future and about the possibilities of what we can do in the entertainment world to impact and change our world.
First of all, we should say that Kerry Washington, when the play first premiered on Broadway, got rave reviews. Jesse Green in the New York Times, who covers your work extensively, he's followed you for a long time now, raved about her performance. That picture is still available on Netflix, and I really encourage people to watch it. It is riveting, and her performance, Kenny, is so heartbreaking. But what's interesting, two things about it that I find interesting. One, the script was written by a white playwright. And that was kind of shocking to me because from my white perspective, it captured the black experience in that play so well. And yet here's a white playwright. And the other thing that I found fascinating was that Kerry Washington isn't necessarily always sympathetic in that role. There are times when you sort of want to say to her, back off, you know? So both of those were interesting to me.
Well, I think, this is my own personal belief, I think that truth is truth. And there's certainly things that are wrong in our society and are challenging. And so when you look at it, you look at, hey, doors are not open enough for women. They're not open enough for people of color. But at the end of the day, you know, when we get through this next step, it can't be just about the numbers. The numbers are an indicator of what we are doing wrong and what we're not paying attention to. But, you know, when we get past the first step, then we got to understand that, you know, a good idea can come from anywhere. You know, white, black, brown ideas are good ideas. And Chris, who wrote American Son, he's a brilliant lawyer and a brilliant writer. And I think the combination of what he put on the page and who we had in the room, you know, Jeremy Jordan, Stephen Pasquale, Eugene Lee. So you had a combination of black and brown and white people working together to pull this thing off. So, you know, it's like, I don't mean this in a flippant way, but there are good white people and there are good black people, you know, good people. And we have to all work to just create a more precious country.
All that said, in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing last spring, you became part of a community of African-American artists, primarily in New York, forming an organization called Black Theater United. It was some of the greatest names in American theater, Audra McDonald, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Felicia Rashad, who you've worked with innumerable times, LaShans, just an extraordinary group. And you came together to say, essentially, there needs to be reform and a way to combat systemic racism within the theater community and, of course, in the larger world beyond that. Having said that, you also, though, extend an olive branch to the white community, which some of the other black artists in New York did not want to do. They were much more militant. So tell us about what your approach is with Black Theater United.
Well, I think with any shall we call it revolution, any revolution, it takes everybody. So I am not, I'm supportive of all organizations trying to do right, trying to rid the country of systemic racism, which is a real thing in our world. But with Black Theater United, first of all, I want to honor the families of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. You know, I don't think we should use their deaths and a way that perpetuates where we want to go personally. But I think it was a moment in time. George Floyd represented a moment in time when America said enough is enough. And for those of us in Black Theater United, the 19 founders and most of us who are engaged in Broadway theater, we wanted to use the memory of George Floyd to do something that will impact change that lasts long after we're gone. So we could see the racism in front of us in our world, on the Broadway stages, behind Broadway stages, the challenges of how do you diversify unions and how do you get Black people involved with that? And purposely, our name says Black Theater United. There are many organizations that are supportive of the term BIPOC and people of color, and we're all supportive of that. But we think that this moment is really about us dealing with our original sin of slavery, and focuses on because what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, those were Black people, you know, those are an American son. Those are Black people specifically being pulled over and killed. So we wanted to focus on Black inequalities. And we think that, you know, if we could raise that boat, then all other boats rise as well. But that doesn't mean we don't have a lot to do with issues that affect BIPOC people. So we're supportive of all that. We're just focused on Black inequalities in our industry, on stage, in our institutions. We want to draw a line from, for instance, historically Black colleges to commercial Broadway theater. How does a kid go from graduating Clark Atlanta University and then figuring out a way to make a living in the commercial theater? So we want to mentor students to help draw that line. We want to use where we are to push back on producers and theater owners to do differently to make our industry better. So that's our focus, and it's a wonderful group of people led by Audra McDonald and LaShange.
You did say last year, during a lot of the attention being focused on African-American participation in general as equals in our society, you did say that when it came to Broadway, there were basically two directors of color who got work on Broadway, you and George C. Wolfe, who, of course, for years ran the Public Theater and went on to a career as a commercial director. So you do feel as if the door needs to open wider.
Look, man, what I said is that there are maybe a couple more Black directors for Broadway, but, you know, George Wolfe and myself, we get a handful. But if you compare that to other directors of our stature, they get a lot more. So it is the Great White Way is still the Great White Way. And but I think we're at a moment in time where our white colleagues are listening. And that's what's different now. You know, they're listening. They see how we can make this different. And I believe, I choose to believe that in this moment, that my white friends and colleagues will do the right thing to effectively work together to make a real change. But we have a long way to go in our country. Yeah. We have a long way to go on Broadway. I just got to work with Ava DuVernay on the Colin Kaepernick story for Netflix. And she is my Ava is my hero. She has she's made changes in the television and film industry in terms of black and brown people behind camera, in front of camera, beside camera. And that's what it takes. It takes people like that to continue to do the work. You have people like in Atlanta, Will Packer, who's doing the work. But I think there are good white and black people that have to step forward to make this happen. And if you're in a position of power and you're white and you're not listening and you're not doing it, then shame on you.
By the way, we got to get to a break, but just for people who, when they hear the name Ava DuVernay, they say, wait a minute, that sounds familiar. She really came burst on the scene with her direction of the picture, Selma. She did a remarkable documentary for Netflix called 13th, which talks about incarceration of African Americans. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're now working with her on the Colin Kaepernick story, which I didn't know was public knowledge. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's a very exciting project. We'll look forward to that. Got to get our final break of the show out of the way. Let's listen to a little more of Kenny Leon's Mahalia Jackson music as we go into this break.
Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on. A star.
As we take a break from the politics of the day on this Friday edition of Political Rewind, you're listening to Mahalia Jackson, who is the subject of Kenny Leon, our guest's new movie for Lifetime, about her extraordinary life as a gospel singer. Kenny Leon, you're also breaking, I don't know that it's a completely broken barrier, but you are making a move that I also think is interesting in terms of expanding your work in theater. You are now the producer on a Broadway musical that you hope the pandemic will end and allow to get started. Just give us a quick couple of words about that.
Well, there are a couple of things I'm doing that I've taken on now in my last half of my professional life. I am the new senior resident director for the Roundabout Theater, working on initiatives to change the idea of what a revival is, so that we don't just always think of Death of a Salesman, Moon for the Misbegotten. We think of Amen Corner, Ceremonies in Dark Old Men. So I want to change that idea. And also I want to draw a line for black directors to find a way to be competitive in the commercial industry. So that's happening. And then I want to spend more time learning what it takes to be a producer in the commercial Broadway world. So I'm working on the lead producing team of Some Like It Hot that's coming to Broadway next year. And I'm excited to work with Bob Wankel and Neil Marin and Bob Greenblatt, who used to be with NBC Universal, and Roy and Nick. And it was like four or five of us who were producers. But yes, I am a producer on one of the producers on Some Like It Hot, but I'm learning a lot.
I'll bet. Some Like It Hot, which many people remember. I certainly do. Great, great comedy. Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, Marilyn Monroe. It's going to be wonderful to see. It seems like a perfect vehicle for putting on Broadway and adding music to, Kenny.
Yes, Casey Nicholaw is directing, so I just can't wait to see what it looks like.
we're really running short on time. I want to mention, we're not going to have a chance to talk about it, but another project of yours that I really would recommend people watch, because it plays into so much of what we talked about, in the show, is you were a director on a project called Amend, which Will Smith hosted, and it tells the story of the 14th Amendment, which if people really know what it is, it's about birthright citizenship. If you are born in the United States, you are a citizen, and therefore you are accorded all the rights of all citizens. It was an extraordinary moment in history. in the 19th century, but African Americans, gay people, and others have had to continue to struggle for the fulfillment of it. It's a wonderful series, Kenny.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It's a 6-part series that I directed all the episodes, and it stars Will Smith, Samuel L. Jackson, and Mahershala Ali, all taking on historical figures, but we set it in contemporary places. But, you know, the 14th Amendment was designed to deal with the aftermath of slavery and citizenship. But, of course, that didn't happen. You know, we became 3/5 of a person. And to this day, we still use the Electoral College, which was grounded in that 3/5 of a person document. So we'll come back and talk longer about the Electoral College, where it came from. Also, just historically, what does it mean to be a respected human being in our country? So we have a long way to go
And Kenny, as we close, it's that, first of all, I think I just heard you say you'll come back and do the show again, which is one of the nicest things I've heard it today. But more important, you remind us, theater, perhaps more than anything else, is so extraordinary to how we come together to try to look at the world in ways that bring us to unite us instead of dividing us. And I think we miss theater right now, the ability to come together in live spaces and share in the experience of seeing other people deal with their lives as we hope to deal with ours. We miss it greatly, don't we?
We do. But I'm so excited that I think that theater is going to start coming back in the summer and then into the fall, and certainly by the beginning of next year. But at this time, it reminds me of just we're all here for just a small amount of time. So it's how we impact each other's lives, how we share our stories, and how we can become better to each other and for each other.
Kenny Leon, I'm so grateful that you spent an hour talking with me on this show. It's always such a pleasure to hear what you're thinking about these days. The Mahalia Jackson movie, Amend, American Son, the project you're going to do with Colin Kaepernick. I can't even mention everything that's on your plate or that you've accomplished already. So, Kenny, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for being with us for another week of Political Rewind. We'll be back, of course, with another show on Monday. In the meantime, I'm Bill Nigut. Take care, stay healthy, wear a mask, and if you haven't had your vaccines yet, make a plan to get one soon. Thanks, everybody.